This is Jake Frankel with Mountain Express. I'm here with
David Forbes, also with Mountain Express.
And I'm Kim Engel, and I'm a resident of East Asheville.
And I'm Chris Pelley with the Hawk Creek Community Association.
And we are walking down the sidewalk on Wall Street here, which is something that many East Asheville residents actually can't do because there are not that many sidewalks in that neighborhood.
That's true.
And that's right, and so we're trying to get City Council to recognize that, and to that end, Council is meeting in East Asheville tonight, and the idea is that we want to testify to them about the need for more sidewalks in East Asheville and about the fact that we've got some unique pedestrian needs that have gone unmet for a long time.
And we'll be talking about all this and more on this edition of Local Matters.
I'd be interested to know why you feel so passionate about this particular issue.
Why don't you go with Kim?
Well, I'll say, from my perspective, living in East Asheville, I've lived there 10 years, and I have two small children, and we've never been able to walk safely in East Asheville, just because of the traffic issue, obviously. There's not enough shoulder on the edge of the road for us to walk or ride bikes or walk our dog. And we've had a number of close calls where cars have just, they're speeding, and as I said, there's not even room enough to step off the side of the road. And so initially that's what got me involved in this group, was just, you know, concern for my own children and for other people who live in East Asheville. Also, I would say, seeing the veterans walking back and forth to the vet hospital or trying to walk across Highway 70 to get their groceries and taking their lives in their hands, running across the highway, when, you know, I can envision them serving our country and they make it back safely and then they're taking their lives in their hands trying to get across the road. And those two things really made this an important issue for me to get involved in.
And I've been president of the Hawk Creek Association for 15 years, and in all that time, the number one top of everything issue is walkability in the community. And this has been an issue that's gone, you know, in one form or another, we've tried to get greenways, and that's been real tough to do. We have had some success at getting sidewalks in the Hawk Creek Valley. We've gotten probably about half a mile worth of sidewalks, a little bit on New Hawk Creek, a little bit on Avon Road. And we're beginning to connect up some of the community centers, the library, there's a great barbecue place, the elementary school. But we have so much more. We've got about one-tenth of New Hawk Creek Road, the main artery for Hawk Creek Valley, done. So we've got another 3 miles to go there, almost 3 miles to go there. But again, in all the time, this has been the number one issue for people. And so back in January, around a kitchen table at Mariana Bailey's house, leaders from the neighborhood groups began to talk and said, you know, we need to work together. And out of that came this East Asheville Sidewalk Initiative, where we have eight neighborhood groups and the veterans working with us now. And we started looking beyond our own immediate neighborhoods. And the one artery that binds us all together, the main road, is Tunnel Road. It's a five-lane road. People drive 50 miles an hour on there, but, you know, we have goat trails. People are walking it, too, and it's just not safe. So this is, we're trying to come together to get council to focus on this.
You mentioned earlier that this was a unique infrastructure need. In what way is this need for East Asheville unique compared to, say, some other parts of the city that also don't have sidewalks?
Well, I think, again, Tunnel Road is the main artery for East Asheville. In the neighborhoods in town that are pre-war neighborhoods, North Asheville, West Asheville, Montford, those, when you did a subdivision or a neighborhood, sidewalks were just part of doing business. We lost that connection after World War II and became more car-oriented. And for a long time, Hawk Creek was kind of rural, but now it's, with the opening and the I-240 cut, more traffic, more development, commercial and residential. And so it's just kind of built on itself, where we sort of ignored the problem for a long time, but now we can't any longer.
And you actually did a study, right, where you looked at how many sidewalks are in different neighborhoods in Asheville, and you found that East Asheville really does have much less sidewalks than other neighborhoods. What were some of those numbers?
Well, we looked at, the city's document is the pedestrian plan that was approved in 1999 and revised in 2004. And we looked at that and went through that, and basically what it confirmed for us, but we were even amazed by the numbers, was that if you pull out downtown and the sidewalks for the downtown business district, if you look at the four sections of the city, North Asheville had about 42% of the residential sidewalks, West Asheville had about 28%, South Asheville about 23%, and East Asheville about 7%. And of that, more than half was in Oakley, so it doesn't even affect the neighborhoods we're talking about here. So there's about 3% of the sidewalks in the city are on the neighborhoods on either side of Tunnel Road.
Are there any other reasons you think that might be? In the past, you mentioned that you think it could be because East Asheville has, for quite a while now, had less representation on city council?
Well, that's been brought up a number of times by different folks, that does resources follow representation? And we're not really focusing on that right now, but certainly East Asheville has not had consistent representation on city council since Ralph Morris Jr. stepped down in 1981. So that's almost 30 years since they've had any representation on council. We're not looking at that so much. We're looking at, how do we go forward from this point here?
Speaking on that, there was recently the city had a presentation from Ken Putnam, the head of the transportation department, and he mentioned on sidewalks, and he mentioned that there was, I think, 108 miles estimated needed in Asheville, usually to connect existing sidewalks. One of the constraints he also spoke of was the city's budget crunch, and the sidewalks tend to be a fairly expensive piece of infrastructure. Are there any ways to counter that?
Well, we've talked to Ken about that, and his rough guesstimate is sidewalks average about $60 a linear foot. They are expensive. But one of the things that we want to bring up with council tonight is we've got parking decks downtown that are fully paid off, that are generating parking revenues in the tune of about $800,000 a year. We've got different transportation needs. Maybe it's time to spend some of those revenues on other transportation needs, i.e. sidewalks around the city.
I remember back at your Sidewalk Summit event in the spring when Ken asked you to draft a priority list, because he said, look, these sidewalks are expensive. We can't put sidewalks in all these neighborhoods you want right away. And you came back to him and you identified your number one priority as this section along 70 between the VA quarters and the VA hospital. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It's referred to as the GOAT Trail.
Right. Do you want to come?
Sure. The GOAT Trail, as they call it, is just a path that they name it a GOAT Trail because it looks exactly like that, because people are walking along the side of the road, and it's a very narrow space, a dirt path that is just along the side of the highway. And again, there's no shoulder. And so that's why we identified that area as needing. You can identify an area for needing sidewalks based on trails being present in that area, and people are currently walking there unsafely. But we also identified the intersection of Beverly Road and Tunnel Road, and the construction has begun for about 900 feet of sidewalk with crosswalks, and crosswalks are another issue that we don't have any crosswalks for people to safely cross that road. So they are installing some lights for people to cross to get to the bus stop safely. But again, as we said earlier, that's just kind of the beginning, and that's a great step. But we have a lot more that we want to get covered.
And going back to Jake's question about that section between the VA hospital and the veterans quarters, there's about 250 veterans living at the ABCCM facility there. Many of them are utilizing services at the VA hospital. And right now, that's a five-lane tunnel road. There are no sidewalks, and hence that's where the GOAT trails, a lot of them have come from the veterans walking that mile from the vet's quarters up to the VA hospital and back.
There's what has been the reception on city council so far to y'all bringing forward this need that you see?
Well, if you look at, if you look at campaign promises, we got unanimous support. everybody's for sidewalks when they're running for office. But the daily paper here in town did a study recently that showed that overall city funding for the budget has gone up 31% in the past 5 years, while funding for sidewalks has only gone up 6% in that same amount of time. So those promises have not translated into on-the-ground improvements, and that's part of the reason for the meeting tonight.
This idea of using some revenue from the parking decks, I remember Cecil Bothwell brought that up at the march a couple months ago. What are you hoping really comes out of this meeting tonight?
Well, we've been hearing again and again and again, there's not money for sidewalks. It's expensive. And what we're trying to do is to get council to look at this problem a little bit differently, kind of shift the kaleidoscope a little bit and look at the perspective a little bit differently. And, you know, sacred cows like parking garages, maybe that's an option that hadn't been considered before for some of these other transportation needs.
David, we were just talking about what the City Council is doing tonight. I know you have an article coming out in this week's issue about what they did at their last meeting. And one of the biggest things that come out of that was they actually are going to open the pedestrian bridge over Hillcrest.
Right? Yes, this has been an issue for many years. The bridge was closed in 94 due to concerns about crime and drug trafficking. And what happened was that Anthony Ray Gilmore tried to cross that bridge in June and died. He was struck by a car and killed. It was very tragic. And his stepfather, a number of Hillcrest residents, city council members Gordon Smith and Cecil Bothwell, all began to kind of push for this bridge to be reopened, for it to be revisited. And council voted 6-1 to reopen the bridge, citing the majority of the residents that they talked to were very much in favor of it. And there were some concerns about security. They're going to have to repair the bridge. They're going to have to clear off a lot of brush. They're going to be paying for a police officer to be fairly close to there a number of hours of the day. But yeah, the bridge will be reopened.
And what kind of timeline is that on? When is it going to actually open?
Well, the bridge is technically run by the State Department of Transportation. They have the final say in it. In this case, they indicated, just like they originally closed the bridge, that whatever City Council recommended, they would abide by. They still have to inspect the bridge. This thing has been closed for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. 16 years, actually. Since 94. And so because of that, a lot of it's decayed. Some people have cut holes in some of the wiring. It's, overgrown. The area around it, they're going to try to install street lamps on it, clear it out. It's going to be months at least.
Mm-hmm. So. It's kind of an experimental reopening as well, isn't it? And it's going to be pretty pricey, from what I understand.
It will. And part of that's because, as we were talking about with the sidewalks earlier, infrastructure is simply not cheap. It's, and especially when it's in fairly bad repair, and there are this many concerns about some of the security issues that were around that area and had to do with the bridge. Police Chief Bill Hogan was up there and painted a pretty horrific picture. He said a lot of police officers who are in the leadership now are officers and sergeants when the bridge was still open. And said a lot of crimes went on there, robberies, assaults, murders, and that they had some serious concerns. So it's going to cost $54,500 to have a police officer who's around that area a lot, and to have more patrols through there. Mm-hmm. And also there's costs involved in just clearing out the area, restoring the infrastructure, repairing the bridge so it can be something people can walk across safely. There's a lot of costs involved in it. They estimate $174,000 to get it opened, and then about $148,000. That includes the cost of the police patrols a year to keep it open. Mm-hmm.
Another controversial issue to come out of that meeting was funding the Montford Commons project.
Yes, that very, very much was a controversial issue. It saw a 4-3 vote in council, which is not unheard of, but fairly rare. And what essentially happened was that there's a development called Montford Commons that is planned for roughly behind the Chamber of Commerce, current Chamber of Commerce site. And it is a mid-range development. It's about 250 units. The area is not really used for much right now. The developers of this say that with the collapse of the economy, to do that kind of development near downtown, have it not be luxury condos, luxury apartments, you have to get some arrangements, some subsidies. They've gotten some federal HUD loans to help them with this, but they were coming to council and saying, we want 50% of our fees waived and not to have to pay the difference in property taxes from us building this for 5 years. They originally wanted 10 years and all their fees waived, but council kind of balked at that due to how tight the budget is and some concerns about it. Where it got controversial was that the city has done incentives like this before, but they usually tend to be with the Biltmore Town Square. That was so it would come into the city. And that was also not remotely affordable housing or their affordable housing. That's the other criteria they use. The thing is, I think only about a third of these units are technically affordable housing. A lot of them are kind of come over that range just a bit. And 600 to 1,200 a month units. And so because of that, a number of Cecil Bothwell said this is one exception too many. Look, you know, he said it's not impossible for private developers to make affordable housing. Plenty of them are doing it right now. On the other side, you have Brownie Newman and Esther Mannheimer, some other people who were saying, look, you know, this is maybe we need to change our policy. This is better than this is the sort of development we want near downtown. And they ended up finding that persuasive and voted for it 4-3. And I also, speaking of kind of political stuff, we've got an election coming up, a fairly contentious one. And Representative Heath Shuler, who's been a fairly contentious representative on a number of sides, is back in town this week. You were there.
Yeah, he's been making the rounds. He was here downtown Asheville recently for a luncheon sponsored by SIBO, a local business group. And he made some news at that meeting. One of the things that kind of caught everyone there by surprise was when someone asked him a question of whether he supported Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. And in that crowd, Nancy Pelosi is not the most popular figure.
I've gotten that impression.
In government. And it was hard to say if he was kind of trying to duck the question or if he was serious, but he basically expressed interest in running for the position himself. He talked a lot about how he was proud to be a Blue Dog Democrat and how they really represent the best interests of the government regardless of, you know, the political sides of the spectrum. He said they represent the middle. And he has a theory that after this election, the Blue Dogs are going to gain a lot of power by some of the more liberal Democrats losing their seats. And if that comes true, he was saying that he would consider running for Speaker of the House himself.
Well, and that's, we should note that Shuler has not always been the most popular person among some of the base of his party. He lost Buncombe and got a surprisingly low portion of the vote for an incumbent against Aisha Wilson, who was a challenger, didn't have a large campaign, didn't have any political recognition. There have been a number of discussions with him on, he voted against the health care bill, he voted against repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's voted against a number of the Democrats' economic initiatives. He's one of the more conservative members of the caucus, and the one thing I heard when his announcement came out as well, he's to have any hope of any higher position there, he's got to keep his current seat, which is happens to be this one.
Well, yeah, which is one reason why I think it caught so many people off guard that he was already expressing interest in being Speaker of the House. When you're right, his re-election is in question right now. I mean, there's been a couple of polls that have come out recently that show the race in a dead heat. Of course, it's really early to be taking polls seriously, but what it does raise is the question of his viability in the local area. Like you said, he really upset a lot of more progressives in Buncombe County when he voted against the Obama administration's health care plan. And he was also asked about that at the meeting. He was asked that if given the opportunity to vote to repeal Obama's health care plan, would he? And again, he kind of avoided giving a direct answer to the question, but he basically defended that vote, said he did not support the bill as written, and that he really does want to do something about health care. And he kind of said that his strategy would be to more look at the system that was in place before then and look for ways to cut costs and fund some new programs that way rather than some of the new initiatives involved in Obama's plan.
Yes, and it's one of the things that progressives have made an issue about. He is, I think it's not a versus saying, he's not very well liked on the progressive side of the Democratic caucus. He's had a number of these votes that have been controversial in their eyes. At the same time, the district doesn't just include Buncombe. It includes a number of other counties which tend to, even on the Democratic side, be more conservative. Mm-hmm. And that's generally carried him through elections so far. But a number of, you know, Miller's running ads. He's got some support from the National Republican Party, and it looks like it could be a very serious race this year.
And the Shuler seems to have the national climate working against him. In off years, people tend to vote against the party in power, whatever party that is, and that certainly seems to be the trend. In terms of Democrats and progressives in Buncombe County being upset with Shuler, after the luncheon, Gordon Smith had an interesting post on
the city councilman.
The city councilman on the Scrutiny Hooligans blog, where he said, I can understand why some of you progressives would be upset with Shuler's health care vote, but look, he votes with the Democratic Party 85% of the time, whereas far as if you don't vote for Shuler, it is essentially like voting for Miller, who's going to vote with the Democratic Party 0% of the times.
Though I've heard, I mean, we should keep in mind about vote counts that a number of those votes are minor procedural. It's not this, you know, that's not Shuler's vote of the Democrats and 87% of big votes. But nonetheless, he has supported some big Democratic initiatives, but the argument of, you know, and this is borne out, I think, by the voter numbers I've heard from a number of progressives, is that it's not just a matter of him voting, it's one thing. Consistently, most big issues the Democrats push that they feel are important, he stands against. And, you know, he may make the, immigration is one. Don't ask, don't tell is another. Health care is another. And that after enough of those pile up, they've started to lose some enthusiasm for him. At the same time, you know, he says he's representing the interest of his area, and that's more than Asheville or Buncombe. You know, it's certainly many sides to this.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if his area agrees with his thought that he's representing them.
Indeed,
coming up here, and I'm also looking forward to having him at the Express offices to speak with us more about these issues. He promised us at the luncheon that he was going to come. Give us some time and answer our questions, so I'm really looking forward to that.
We are certainly looking forward to that interview.
Yeah. Again, this has been Jake Frankel with Mountain Express.
I'm David Forbes, also with Mountain Express.
And you've been listening to Local Matters. Thanks again to our guests, Chris Pelly and Kim Engel from East Asheville, joining us to talk about the sidewalk issue, which will be discussed at a special meeting of City Council tonight.
And more information about the issues we discussed here and many others can be found on mountainx.com.